Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Cigna Eating Disorder Awareness Series conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Kate Harner. Please go ahead.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you for calling in to Cigna's 2013 Eating Disorder Awareness Series. My name is Kate Harner, and I'm a care manager on the Eating Disorder team at Cigna. Due to the format of this call today, you will not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of the conference, you will be transferred into a brief five-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After the survey, you will be able to ask questions of today's speaker. A handout for today's presentation is available online at www.cigna.com/eatingdisorders. Halfway down the page, under the heading Current Topics, you'll see the link for today's presentation in blue, entitled Family and Friends, Part of the Treatment Team for Eating Disorders. Once again, visit the Awareness Series webpage online at www.cigna.com/eatingdisorders. Halfway down the page, under the heading Current Topics, you will see the link for today's presentation in blue, entitled Family and Friends, Part of the Treatment Team for Eating Disorders. Please also notice the blue square in the top section of the page that you may click to sign up for future seminars. It's not required that you sign up in order to attend the monthly seminars. However, if you choose to do so, you will receive email reminders for each month's presentation. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Ms. Kitty Weston. Ms. Weston is the Advocacy Director for the Emily Program Foundation. Today, she will be sharing information with us on how family and friends can be part of the treatment team for eating disorders. Welcome, Ms. Weston.
Thank you, Kate. Hi, everyone. I really appreciate this opportunity to talk with you today. And if you're on the website and have the presentation up, you can follow along, and I will kind of signal you when it's time to change sides, unless it's really apparent. So, if you go to the second slide, one of the things that I really want to spend time talking about is the importance of family and friends in recovery from an eating disorder. And a friend of mine, Dr. Cynthia Bulick, who is a world-renowned researcher and treatment professional out of North Carolina, had a really interesting statement about the importance of family and friends. And I just wanted to share this with you. There is absolutely no evidence to suggest that there is a parenting style that causes or leads to eating disorders. Families are our best allies in treating these illnesses and should not be blamed. And I say that because there was a time that parenting style was blamed for lots of different disorders. There was a time when schizophrenia was blamed on moms and autism, and I think we're moving away from that, which is, I think, a very, very good thing. So my intention this early afternoon is to help everyone on the call feel really confident, if you're a family or friend, to be able to support someone with an eating disorder. And if you're struggling with an eating disorder, what I intend today is to give you hope and to encourage you to reach out to your family and friends to help you in your recovery process. And I understand that not everyone that's struggling with an eating disorder is able, for whatever reasons, to reach out to family, but there is strong evidence that a good support network really does assist in recovery. So reach out to those family and friends. So the next slide is a slide that kind of introduces me. Why am I here? Why do I care about this so much? Well, I care about this because my beautiful daughter, Anna Selena Weston, was born on November 27th, 1978, and she died on February 17th, 2000. She was 21 years old. She died of anorexia nervosa. And what I know is that she should be here today. We have really good treatment for eating disorders. and we must make sure that people get that treatment. And people fully recover from eating disorders and go on to live these rich, full, eating disorder-free lives. So hopefully we can talk about that today. I don't have a lot of time today, so I can't tell you the full story about Anna's life and death. Next slide is Anna at her high school graduation. And Anna was first diagnosed with anorexia when she was 16 years old, and she went into outpatient treatment, and she recovered. She did great. She participated fully. We had family therapy around her eating disorder to help us all better understand. And what I want to say right here is during that early time when Anna was first being diagnosed, my husband and I felt really alone, and we were really scared, and there wasn't very much information, and we didn't know where to turn. And it wasn't easy to find any accurate information about eating disorders or how to best support someone with one. And I am so grateful to Cigna for offering this series that is helping people all feel empowered and as they are part of the treatment team. So Anna went off to college after high school graduation, and she did quite well until the summer between her sophomore and junior year. And during that period of time, she relapsed. And she became very, very ill very, very quickly and went into a hospital. And for the last 6 months of her life, she was in and out of inpatient. She would go to a partial hospital program and then would struggle and need to go back into the hospital. And she fought her eating disorder very, very hard. And I'm really proud of Anna for fighting as hard as she did. She hated her eating disorder. She tried really hard to manage the symptoms. And for whatever reason, she lost hope that she would recover. And one of the things that's really important when I talk about Anna's life and death, when I tell my story, is that Anna's death is an ending but with a new beginning, because if I told you the story and thanked you for listening and left it at that, it would be a story that would and probably make you feel very, very sad, and it wouldn't be a story of hope. So this really is a story of hope. Slide is how did I do that? How did I move from the horror of losing our daughter to hope and a future? Well, we had to do that. I had to find a way to transform the horror of her death into something positive. And so we started the Anna Weston Foundation immediately after her death, which is now the Emily Program Foundation. And there's lots of reasons for that as well, mostly because as the Anna Weston Foundation, it was myself in my home office as a volunteer, and I needed some help, and so I merged with a little bit larger organization that could offer some infrastructure. And we also were able to bring a residential level of eating disorder treatment to Minnesota, which is the Anna Weston House. And the goals of the foundation were to really look at all the factors that contribute to eating disorders, including the media, the fashion industry, and all those myths and misconceptions that are out there about who gets eating disorders and why they get them. I intended to speak as often as I could to anyone who would listen, and I kind of got myself into a speaker role and have actually in the last 13 years traveled the world talking about eating disorders, talking about family and friends and the importance of bringing family and friends into the treatment team, what it is like to be in this position. And I really set out to make sure everybody has access to care and hope for their future. And I became an advocate, and it was really important to me that I could advocate for public policy in the form of legislation, that I advocate individually with clients. And most of all, I really truly believe that death ends a life, not a relationship. So I feel responsible. I need to be Anna's voice. So next slide, what's changed? I've been doing this work for 13 years, and honestly, sometimes I get really tired, and sometimes it's exhausting, and it feels like pushing an iceberg uphill. And then I look back, and I think about what really has changed. And there's really been significant changes in the past 13 years. There is a greater understanding and awareness of eating disorders, and this series is proof of that. There was nothing like this when Anna was ill. There is a lot of research going on around eating disorders, and it's research that's being done so we can better prevent eating disorders in the first place. Some of you may have heard the statement, the best treatment for an eating disorder is prevention. We have to get it right. And there's lots of eating disorder or lots of research around what the best treatment is. We've worked hard to change laws, to work to make sure there's mental health parity, to make sure eating disorders are covered under the Affordable Care Act. There is less shame for having mental health problems. Mental health problems have kind of come out of the closet. People are much more able to talk about them. I'm not saying that shame has gone away. And there's still a lot of secrecy. There's still a lot of times when people feel afraid to talk about it. It'll hurt their employment. Their friends will turn away, whatever. But that has improved. And especially there's so much more support for family and friends and more acceptance of the role of family and friends in recovery. And I can recall when Anna was first diagnosed being told that I was too involved and I needed to back out. Anna was only 16 and she needed to do this. And that was really disturbing to me, being her mother, because I certainly wanted to be a support for her. I didn't want to do anything that would cause her any more pain or suffering. And I needed to know what to do, not what not to do. So I've really made it a mission of mine to help people understand what to do. So moving on, eating disorders are not an adolescent phase, and this is one of the myths that is out there about what eating disorders are, that they're a phase, nothing to worry about, people will grow out of it. Well, no, as probably everyone on this call understands, is that eating disorders are very serious, can be life-threatening illnesses, and that they're influenced by our biology, you know, how our brain is structured, the kind of personality we have, and then the culture that we live in has a huge impact, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. And so why do eating disorders happen? Well, we know that eating disorders are not behavior problems, and they're not choices. And that eating disorders, while they're not behavior problems and not choices, in order to recover, behavior has to change. And in that way, they're a little bit like substance abuse disorders. They're not really addictions, but they have some real similarities. So someone with an eating disorder can't just stop doing it. They need help. And I recall when Anna was sick, having a very well-meaning friend of mine who cared about me and cared deeply about Anna and knew how sick she was. And this is when she was in the hospital and fighting for her life. And this friend said to me, well, just make her eat. And I was just like, really? Did you just say that? Don't you think I would have thought of that? If I could make that happen, of course I would. And it's not that simple. She has a real illness, and she's in treatment, and she's fighting, and we're doing the very best we can. So what we know is that eating disorders are oftentimes a way to cope or communicate or solve problems. oftentimes people with eating disorders feel empty, feel afraid, feel depressed, feel anxious, and eating disorder is the coping mechanism. And part of treatment is to teach people new coping mechanisms so they don't go back to the eating disorder behavior. And family and friends can be really instrumental in that part to understand that this is not a behavior problem. It's not being stubborn. It's not wanting to be, wanting to manipulate. It's a real illness, and these are the things the person's working on in treatment. And this is what you can really encourage and reinforce. One of the problems with eating disorders, a lot of people with eating disorders get reinforced, and that the behavior is supported by our environment. And when somebody starts losing weight, oftentimes they compliment it on a weight loss. And whether, you know, the person that's complimenting doesn't know if this person is losing weight because they are intentionally eating healthy or if they have anorexia and are starving themselves. And so people are always fighting that societal pressure to look and be a certain way. Parents and friends do not cause eating disorders. And that is something that is just so important to understand so we can get past the guilt, get past the trying to figure out what I did wrong, and get on to what can help. And family and friends are really important in the recovery process. So one of the things that I spend a lot of time talking with people about, and I lead a lot of family and friend support groups, and I hear the why question a lot. You know, why did this happen? And what I try to talk about is that the why really isn't the right question. The right question is how. When we are wanting to support somebody in recovery, or if you are in recovery, how? How am I going to recover? How can I help that person recover? How can I best support the person I care about? So it's the how question that is most important. So the next slide is really, wanted to put this in here because I often get questions about how do you identify early if someone has an eating disorder, and I just thought this might be helpful, and it's mostly designed to look at children and adolescents, but I think these same statements can be used when you're dealing with almost any age. So eat with your child as often as you can. Eat with your adolescent. Eat with your partner as often as you can. You can tell a lot by sharing meals together. Are they eating? Are they not eating? Are they binging? Are they eating and then excusing themselves and purging, getting rid of the food by throwing up or whatever they're doing? And then you want to watch for those changes. Is something different? Anna used to eat with the family. She ate what was served. She didn't complain a lot about what food was served. And then at some point, she started really restricting and saying that she couldn't possibly eat this or that or whatever. And I didn't know at the time, but that was a change in her habit. Listening to how someone talks about food. Is food something that it's an enjoyable pastime? It's something that's social. You share it with your family and friends. You go out together. It's a fun thing to do. Or has it become an obsession? Has it become something that's all you can talk about or think about, yet it's impossible to eat it? Or if you're talking about food in terms of how many calories, how many carbs, how many, you know, obsessively looking at those numbers. And then looking at a change in mood or attitude, we look for when somebody's developing an eating disorder, oftentimes they become maybe more secretive. Sometimes you see signs of depression. more withdrawal, maybe more hiding things. Sometimes you see irritability and anger. Sometimes you'll see somebody that was once pretty cooperative and participated and you could easily talk to become more confrontational and less willing to sit down and discuss something or talk about that issue. And then if you watch for someone who eats large amounts of food constantly and seems to be doing it without even realizing it, it's just this this binging, especially during times of stress, that could indicate the beginnings of binge eating disorder or compulsive overeating. So those are some really elementary steps, but will help you just begin to develop or to begin to understand if maybe there's a problem. So we're going to go into treatment and spend just a little bit of time talking about treatment, and then I want to spend more time talking about recovery. So the next slide is there's a lot of different levels of treatment for eating disorders. Eating disorder treatment can be outpatient treatment. Typically that would mean the person would have a psychologist, and possibly a dietitian, and see those two people once a week. There's such a thing as intensive outpatient therapy, and that usually then means that the person would participate in a group, maybe share a meal or a snack with the group. Sometimes intensive day program is 3 to 4 hours a day for 3 or 4 days a week. And then oftentimes there's other professionals that are brought in, a medical doctor, psychiatrist, depending on what the needs of the person is. There's partial hospital programs, and those are really full-day programs. They can be 5, 6, or 7 days a week. Usually they're 8-hour days. They can go up to 10-hour days where the person is in treatment most of their waking hours, typically having 2 or 3 meals a day with the treatment team and snacks, and then sleeping, going home at night to sleep. And then that moves up to residential care. So residential is what it sounds like, 24-hour care, anywhere from, 30 to 90 to 120, whatever number of days the person needs to fully recover. I want to say that that people with eating disorders, it's very typical for people to start at one level of care, maybe outpatient, and then once they are with the team for a little while, it's determined that they may need more care. And then be referred to maybe intensive outpatient, and then maybe referred to an even higher level of care, and then go from higher level to care, like a intensive outpatient back to outpatient, but then struggle again and need to go back into an intensive program. So recovery is very, very seldom a linear or a straight line. It is typically people moving in and out of levels of care as they need it. So it's usually very flexible. And it's really important that families are involved in the treatment process. So I would suggest anybody on this call, if you are looking into treatment for yourself or you're looking into treatment for someone you care about, to ask the treatment program about what services they have for family and friends. Oftentimes they'll have support groups that are free drop-in groups for family and friends. They'll have supported meals where family and friends join the person that's struggling for meals. There'll oftentimes be family therapy. But it's really important to know that. And the other thing important about treatment is insurance. You need to know what your policy says. And it's important to talk with your insurer and really find out what what they're going to cover, and compare that to what treatment center, and to work with your insurance company. And most of them are really willing and want, you know, they want the same outcome. They want the person to fully recover. So there's certain questions you really need to ask when you make that first call, sort of besides what, if the policy will cover whatever level of care you're looking at, but do they cover diagnostic assessment? Do they cover not only individual therapy but group therapy? Do they cover registered dietitians, medical psychiatry, those kinds of things? So what I always tell people when they call me and are asking about insurance, I tell them to call the company, ask to speak to someone in their behavioral health, and just have that conversation and work together to make sure that the person gets access to care. So let's move on to recovery. And because this is the area that I think family and friends can be most helpful in. So recovery from an eating disorder is possible. People get better. And that, if you don't hear anything else I say today, I want you to take that home. That's the take-home message. That it's hard and it looks different for everyone, and people fully recover. It can take a while. Eating disorder recovery, typically, just like the treatment, isn't a straight line. Recovery isn't a straight line. It takes time. It takes a lot of effort. And you can't tell if someone's recovered by looking at them. You can't judge recovery based on looks. It is much more complicated than that. And again, I keep saying this, but it's so important that involvement of family and friends in recovery is important. And part of the reason that is that in treatment, the person is with a treatment team for a few months, a year, whatever it happens to be. And then the intention is that person goes back to their real life, which is their family and friends and their jobs and all of those things. And if the family and the friends and the community isn't able to support the person, the recovery is just plain, it's just more difficult. So we know how important it is to include family and friends. So the next slide is how to help a family member or friend. Well, I think learning as much as you can about eating disorders. And again, there's lots of good resources. And at the end of these slides, there's a list of some of my favorite resources, web-based, that you can go to and find out anything that almost you want about eating disorders from a really reliable source. You're learning about it by being on this call and by attending the other seminars in this series. It's really important, if you're a support person, to understand what your role is. And your role is not to be the treatment provider. You get to be the person who is offering support and guiding the person without doing the treatment. And that's a really good thing, because treatment is complex and it's complicated. And, you know, we give that to the professionals. And you can offer that helping hand. And one of the things we talk a lot about is, when I'm working with family and friends and they're asking me what can they do and how can they best support, and one of the things I say is, you know, ask your loved one if they would like you to drive them to their next appointment, or, you know, how they could best be supportive, or do you want to go have coffee and talk about it after your appointment, those kinds of things. So if you go to the next slide, that to remember, again, that recovery is possible, but that it's hard, and that eating disorders really are complex illnesses, and they affect the whole person. They affect the person physically, emotionally, socially, and they affect development. So one of the things that I tell folks all the time is that I've been doing this kind of work, and I probably understand eating disorders as well as almost anybody because I read everything. I go to all the conferences. I spend a lot of my time, and there are days that I kind of don't get it. And I'm not ashamed to say that because they're so complicated. And they're oftentimes counterintuitive. So if you're struggling with an eating disorder and you get really frustrated because, oh, my goodness, this is just so hard, yes, it is. And if you're supporting someone and there's days that you just don't get it, yeah, of course, they're that complex. So moving on, we do know that it's important. So you get involved because research shows that having families, friendships, support and guidance and compassion are really healing. It's no different than, say, your loved one is in a car accident and ends up in a hospital and is fighting for his or her life. And family and friends are there and they surround the person and they give the person love and compassion and are just present there, that's really a healing thing for the person that's ill. So your presence is important. And so going on, I said this before, but it's a long process, and it can sometimes seem painfully slow. Recovering from an eating disorder is sometimes a long process that has starts and stops, and it can be really frustrating for the person that's struggling, and it can be really frustrating for the support people. And so knowing that going in, that your patients will be tested. There's going to be days that you feel like you're in a battle and you're in a fight. And how I want you to think about that, if you choose to, is that you're in a fight with the eating disorder, and that's okay. You're not in a fight with the person you love. The person you love wants to be rid of the eating disorder and is trying hard, and you're going to join together as a team to help that person. So next slide. If you know someone who's struggling, then it really is important to get help from others that have more experience. And that can be professionals, that can be going to, if it's a student, going to the school counselors, just seeking out that experience. And then really talking to that person and talking to them honestly and openly about what you're worried about. So it's giving data. It's talking about what you see and hear, and you're not diagnosing, you're not telling the person she or he needs treatment, you're just saying, this is what I'm concerned about. And then ask the person, what can you tell me about these things? What do you think about me talking about this? Because what you want to do is you want to always validate that person has ideas about all this, and you want to give them that chance to talk about, and then have the resources available. One of the things that I talk with when I speak with families is to have the local resources for eating disorder treatment or support that they can hand to the person they're talking to, and say, this is a website, this is a center, this is a person that you can call and get some more information. Or do you want me to be with you when you make that call? Those kinds of things. So what can you do? It's really important to try to always react with empathy and compassion and to keep trying. It can be frustrating. Some of the hallmarks of eating disorders are people being in denial and being resistant to treatment, again, some similarities with the addiction world. And so you just keep trying and try not to get in power struggles because those are very hard to win. Any of us who have ever had a two-year-old, we know that. And to try to avoid any comments about weight or appearance and thinking about other ways to talk with somebody. Instead of you look great, it's just great to see you. Or when you see someone, you know, your eyes are sparkly today. I just love seeing you, those kinds of things. And then it's really important to keep trying to understand. And the person that is in recovery is working very hard and maybe has a really bad day and comes home and says, you know, this is the worst day of my life and the treatment team knows nothing and it's the worst place in the whole world. And to come back with, this, it sounds like you really had a hard day today, or you seem really sad today, or it seems like you're really scared. So you're not arguing and saying you don't feel that way. You're saying, I get it, and you're going back tomorrow because this is what you need to do. So you're firm, and you're not giving in, and you understand that it's hard. And then take good care of yourself if you're a support person. Please, please, please. So how we define recovery, next slide. It's a peaceful relationship with food, eating, body, and self. Food, eating, and body are enjoyable elements of living, loving, and community. So the next slide talks about the difference between normal eating and abnormal eating. And I just want to touch on this really briefly. There's lots of questions about that. So really what normal eating is, it's about being flexible. It varies depending on the day and the time of day and the holiday. There's some holidays that sanction overeating, binge eating, like Thanksgiving. It's a lot about food, and that's okay as long as it's a holiday. And so it's being able to be flexible, and it varies in response to hunger, your schedule, your proximity to food, and your feelings. It's not rigid. So let's move on to the reality is that people with eating disorders come in all shapes and sizes. You can't tell if someone has an eating disorder by looking at them. And it is really important to note that weight has to be considered in context. There are 3 billion women who don't look like supermodels and only 8 who do. And that's the truth. And those 8 people are naturally that way unless they have an eating disorder. So healthy looks different for everyone. There's no right size. There's no there's no way to determine if somebody's healthy by just looking at them. And we now know that people can be healthy at any size. And there's so much focus on weight that it has become really counterproductive. We have had this so-called war on obesity for about 40 years, and it is true that the numbers of people that are obese has increased, and we've been raging this war for 40 years, and we're losing it. Why? Because we don't have the right strategies in place. And our battle plan is flawed. Telling people to go on diets and trying to shame people and talking all about numbers, we just know it doesn't work. So things we can do to prevent eating disorders. And one of the things that we can do is stop talking about diets. And talk about health in a different way. So there's some great research about this. There's a study that just came out of the University of Minnesota that's talking about healthful eating with children that gives the children solutions instead of talking about weight and telling them that they're overweight or they're fat or whatever people say to them, that just embarrasses them and tends to make people eat more. So resist the urge to diet because they don't really work in the long run. Most people who diet gain it all back. So what we talk a lot about in the eating disorder community is to talk about health and wellness and healthy living. So prevention, next slide, really start thinking and talking differently about your body. Instead of, I hate the way my legs look, too. My legs help me run fast. They're a part of me. It make me healthy and strong. And when somebody comments about weight and appearance It's okay to stand up to them and say, you know, that really is not important. Somebody's size isn't important. And to really talk about feelings and to develop a self-care toolkit for times that you have strong emotions. So if you're struggling with an eating disorder, finding other coping strategies instead of going back to the eating disordered behavior. So everyone can make a difference if we move on. We know that the media has an influence on all of us, and we live in this culture of thinness, this toxic culture that shows both men and women that there's a right size and shape, and if we don't meet that, we're not good enough, we're not going to get the right job, we're not going to be friends, nobody's going to care about us, all those things that simply aren't true. And so think about what you read, what you watch, where you spend your money. You know, look at advertising. Be a good consumer. And if there's something upsetting about an advertisement, then it's okay to say, you know what, I'm not going to support that company. That is just not okay. And try to learn to love yourself just for who you are. And so where we're trying to go with all this is that wouldn't it be great if we were all able to eat and be active in tune with the body's needs? Eat when hungry and stop when satisfied. Eat a variety of food without a fear of fat. Focus on health. Appreciate our body. Think critically about the media and employ coping skills. So next slide, one of my favorite things is to tell people to remember we don't need to change our bodies. We need to change our minds. I stand for living your dreams in the body you have now. I stand for a hate-free future for everybody. I stand for having a positive body image for little girls who look just like me. And I roll for solidarity at every size because we need each other. So to close, this is a quote from Anna's journal. And I think she left it for me and as a gift. She wrote this right before she died. And I end every talk I do, no matter what the audience, with this quote because I think it's so powerful about being an active part and having a voice, and if you're struggling to find your voice, and if you're a family member, to speak your truth and to be an advocate. So may all your love, joy, and pain, all your fears and desires lead you to your own promises. May your dreaming never end and your voice never die. So I thank you for participating and for your involvement, and I'm going to pass it back to Kate.
To help us evaluate and improve our program, please complete the following short survey. After I finish reading the entire question and all of the possible responses, please answer by pressing the star key followed by the number that corresponds to your choice. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in this survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. Question number one. This session provided me with a better understanding of how to identify if my loved one might be developing an eating disorder. Press star 1 for strongly agree, star 2 for agree, star 3 for disagree, star 4 strongly disagree. Please vote now. Question number 2. This session educated me on how I can help a loved one who is struggling with an eating disorder. Press star 1 for strongly agree, star 2 for agree, star 3, disagree. Star 4, strongly disagree. Please vote now. Question number 3. Overall, this session met my expectations. Please select one of the following responses. Star 1 for strongly agree. Star 2, agree. Star 3, disagree. Star 4, strongly disagree. Please vote now. Question number 4. I would recommend this program to others. Press star 1 if you agree. Press star 2 if you disagree. Question number 5. Please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with an eating disorder. Star 1, I am an individual with an eating disorder. Press star 2, I am a family member of someone with an eating disorder. Press star 3, I am a health professional. Or star 4, for other. Please vote now. And that does conclude our electronic survey. If you'd like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1. A voice prompt on your phone line will indicate your line is open to state your question. Again, please press star 1 if you'd like to ask a question at this time. We'll pause for just a moment to assemble our roster. Again, everyone, that's star 1 if you'd like to pose a question. We currently have no callers in the queue at this time. We'll pause for just a moment to see if we have anyone with a question. And we have no questions in the queue at this time. I'll turn the conference back over to Ms. Harner to offer any additional remarks.
Thank you, and I want to thank everyone for attending and also say a special thank you to Ms. Kitty Weston for providing us with such wonderful insights today. Kitty, we appreciate you sharing your experience and your personal stories so that others might learn ways to assist their loved ones who may be struggling. If anyone who is listening today has specific questions about any of the therapies or treatments discussed today, please feel free to contact the Eating Disorder team at Cigna by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Please also be sure to mark your calendars to join our next Eating Disorder Awareness Seminar next month on Tuesday, July 23rd at 1 p.m. Eastern, that's noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific. Thanks so much, everyone.
That does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation.